Hi, I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. Last week, a federal grand jury indicted five New Orleans police officers for their role in the events surrounding the death of Henry Glover. In a story published in The Nation magazine in December 2008 and supported by ProPublica, the investigative fund at The Nation Institute, the Center for Investigative Reporting, and New America Media, reporter A.C. Thompson wrote about the mysterious death of Glover and how New Orleans police officers were the last people to see him. Thompson won an Investigative Reporters and Editors Award and the Molly Ivins Prize, and he was a finalist for the Goldsmith Prize for his extraordinary reporting. I spoke to Thompson on the phone on Tuesday, June 15th, about the indictments. I began by asking him about the details of the tragic death of Mr. Glover.
We still don't know exactly what happened to Henry Glover. It's been 5 years since he died, and it's still a mystery in a lot of ways. This is what we know for sure, is that he was shot, that he was trying to get medical help from police, that his body wound up burnt and left a short distance from the New Orleans 4th District Police Station in a burnt-out car, and that it took more than a year to identify his body because all that was left of it was ashes and bone fragments and roasted flesh. What happened last week was that the federal government said, well, we have an idea of what happened. And what we think happened is that a New Orleans police officer named David Warren shot Henry Glover, that two New Orleans cops, Dwayne Sherman and Greg McRae, burnt up his body and beat up his friends, and two more officers were involved in falsifying police reports and lying to federal investigators. And that's the narrative that the federal government told in a 11-count criminal indictment filed in federal court last week.
Are those the only five that were indicted?
Those were the five people who were indicted at this point, and three of them are current officers. Two of them have left the force since then, but they were all New Orleans police officers at the time. What I've been thinking about is how many other people might have known about what happened to Henry Glover and might have evidence about what happened to Henry Glover.
And you mean other police officers?
That's what I mean, is other police officers, because the area where the shooting occurred was near an NOPD substation, and Officer Warren was with another officer when the shot was fired. The area where Henry Glover allegedly died was a school where a bunch of SWAT team officers were camped out, and I've been told that on any given day there were 50 to 60 SWAT team officers there. And by all accounts, everyone I've interviewed says there were numerous officers there that day when this occurred, not just two, numerous. The reports that were written up about what happened to Henry Glover went through many people. They went through many people's hands. And finally, the place where his body was incinerated was literally just down the street from the 4th District Police Station. I mean, it was just down the street. And it's hard for me to think that other people, other than the five people who were indicted, didn't know about what happened to him. I think it's probably the case that many other people knew about what happened to Henry Glover. And what's concerning, what's worrisome, is that none of these officers apparently saw fit to say, hey, a guy died, it looks suspicious, some people might think it's murder, and his body was desecrated, it was defiled and burnt up. And allegedly some of these police reports about what happened are bogus. Nobody spoke up about that. Nobody said, hey, this is wrong, this is a big problem. And I think that's the culture of corruption that runs very, very deep in the New Orleans Police Department, where the federal government has eight open criminal investigations. You saw the same thing with the Danziger Bridge incident, which happened around the same time, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, where officers opened fire on six civilians on the Danziger Bridge. And according to the guilty pleas that are coming out in federal court, they conspired to lie about what happened. They planted a gun at the scene of the crime to make it look like a shootout, to make it look like the civilians were attacking the officers. That there was a wide, wide conspiracy in that case to mislead the public, to mislead police officials, and to wrongly railroad innocent people, and to cover up the fact that people had been wrongly killed. I think what you're seeing with the Glover matter is there are a lot of parallels there, and the question of who knew is still a looming, important question.
Well, now, you wrote about that in a story last week about Glover's body being burned inside the Tanner's Malibu, Chevy Malibu. And one of the things I was wondering is, can police be prosecuted for abiding by the blue wall of silence?
Absolutely. Police officers who do not alert their superiors to possible criminal activity by their fellow officers can be prosecuted for their failure to do that. And that happens regularly. This is the kind of thing that you're seeing happen in the Danziger Bridge case. And so if an officer knows of criminal activity, but obscures it, but conceals it, but doesn't alert anyone, that they can be prosecuted for that. If an officer is actively involved in covering up criminal activity, if they're conspiring with other officers to falsify reports, they definitely can be prosecuted for that as well. And that may still happen. I mean, we may still see more indictments come down because of that. And when I speak to officers who have been before the federal grand jury to talk about the Henry Glover matter, they say, look, the feds want to know why we didn't say anything. They're looking at us all like, hey, you guys should have done something. You're law enforcers. Why didn't you step up? It makes you guys all look like you were conspiring to hide this criminal activity.
And that's one of the things that you've been kind of continuously working on. Can you give us an update on where that investigation is?
Here's the problem with judging investigations by the New Orleans Police Department at this point. The problem is that you don't know whether officers are conspiring to conceal the truth, or if they're just doing sloppy, shoddy work. Key evidence wasn't collected in many of these cases. Civilian witnesses were not interviewed in many of these cases. There were all kinds of signs that the NOPD didn't do a good job in investigating these possible crimes committed, possibly committed by police officers. The problem was we didn't know, and we still don't know, if this was sloppiness or whether this was intentional. But the more that you see cases popping up where officers are criminally prosecuted for conspiring to conceal the truth, allegedly, the more it makes you wonder about the other shootings from that time period. And when I say other shootings, I'm talking about the shooting of Danny Brumfield, the shooting of Matthew McDonald, and the shooting of Keenan McCann.
Now, you know, some of your reporting was cited by the FBI as part of the motivation in issuing the indictments. At least your work sort of got them on the trail. Can you talk a little bit about what's been driving you on this?
I got asked by a New Orleans journalist recently about New Orleans, and the person said, oh, you must really love this city. You know, you feel compelled to come down here and do all this reporting on it. And I said, you know, I like New Orleans, but really I am concerned about human rights. And to me, these are human rights stories. And so no matter where they occurred, I'd be intrigued and feel compelled to follow them. The reason I've been chasing these stories for so long is that they stand out for me, that they're worse than, frankly, than what you find in a lot of places. Look, let me put it like this. I had been reporting on criminal justice for more than a decade, and I had never encountered a case where there were serious allegations that police officers burned up a man's body and desecrated his body like that. And those were, as my reporting began to show, serious, credible, possible allegations. And to me, that just stood out as an indicator that you were dealing with a police force that was far more troubled than most of them in the United States of America. And it was just so disturbing that I felt the need to keep investigating.
Have you heard from Henry Glover's family at all?
You know, I have been in touch with Henry Glover's family since 2008. I talked to his auntie a day ago, and the family is very, very glad that they're beginning to see some movement and some steps towards what they perceive as being justice in this matter. This is a family that's been, you know, destroyed by what happened. Their lives are really have been very, very hard because of what happened. And this is something they deal with every day. And I can tell you that they felt for a very long time that nobody cared about what happened to them. And they said, look, how does this happen in modern America that a man can be treated like this and nobody listens to his family? Nobody says, hey, we want to hear what happened. This sounds like a crazy story, but you've clearly lost a loved one. This person has clearly been burnt up. There was almost nothing left of him. We'll help you. We'll figure out what happened. Nobody wanted to figure out what happened to Henry. Nobody cared. Nobody did anything. And I think that's been incredibly scarring for them. And to see now the federal government say, we do care. We are going to try to figure out what happened and to take concrete steps to figure out and go after the people that the government believes are responsible, I think that has been heartening to the Glover family.
All right, 8C, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
That was ProPublica reporter A.C. Thompson. You can read all of his reporting on the Glover case and the New Orleans Police Department at ProPublica.org/NOLA. This podcast was produced by Brent Gardner-Smith. I'm Mike Webb. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.